Okay, so let's unpack this. Today, we are undertaking a critical deep dive into something that impacts, well, pretty much every single home.
Mm-hmm.
How to navigate that really intense, sometimes chaotic landscape of children's emotional challenges.
Right.
We're pulling some specific, very practical strategies from a parenting framework that takes a decidedly internal, heart-based approach.
Yeah, and what's really interesting about this particular guide, you know, is that its whole mission moves way beyond just simple behavior correction.
Okay.
It really operates on this foundational principle that the heart is where emotions live.
Right, the heart.
And therefore, these emotions need to be actively trained, not just, you know, controlled with punishments or timeouts. The idea is that lasting change comes from, well, internal strength.
And that's really our mission today, isn't it? To understand how we can help build that true internal strength and self-regulation.
Exactly.
We're looking at common scenarios you might face, like young Olivia, who's described as generally bubbly, but when her emotions turn, they're apparently very bad. Big swings.
Yeah, those big swings. Or you've got Ryan, the older child, whose frustration gets so intense, he's already broken one video game controller.
Wow.
And is apparently halfway to wrecking the next one.
Yeah.
We definitely need tools for those moments.
We do. So where does this framework start? How do we begin to tackle this?
Okay, so to start, the framework basically says that while kids have tons of feelings, success in managing three specific big emotions gives them the internal strength they need to handle pretty much everything else.
Three big ones.
Yeah, every child needs a concrete strategy, a plan for these three main challenges.
And what are those three cornerstone emotions?
Okay, they are anger, disappointment, or sadness,
right,
and anxiety. The approach suggests tackling these three head on because the character qualities needed to manage them, well, they overlap quite a bit.
Okay, and this is where it gets really interesting for me. Because the course talks about something called cyclonic thinking. It's not just a kid being in a bad mood. It describes this dangerous mechanism where an emotion starts spinning inside the heart.
That's a great way to put it, spinning.
And once that emotion gets enough momentum, it stops being a feeling the child has and starts being the force that controls the child.
That's it, exactly. If we don't interrupt that spin, the emotion just spirals out of control. We need to catch it early.
Oh.
Well, specifically looking at anger, the guide gives us 8 indicators, or you could call them symptoms, that parents can look for.
Okay.
These show that the cyclone is already building up steam inside, you know, maybe long before the huge outburst actually happens.
Let's maybe link those symptoms together.
Yeah.
Because seeing that progression sounds really crucial for intervening early.
Absolutely. The progression, it often starts simply like not responding well to correction or feedback.
Defensiveness.
Right. Immediately defensive. And that can rapidly escalate into blaming problems on other people, always justifying their own reaction by pointing fingers somewhere else.
And if that pattern keeps going, it sort of hardens into a victim mentality, doesn't it?
Precisely. If you hear your child consistently saying things like, well, if everyone else would just change, I'd be fine, you know that cyclone is spinning hard. They're shifting accountability completely off themselves.
Okay, I see that.
And that victim mentality, it quickly feeds the next stage. The entitlement mentality, which is this sort of silent conviction that you owe me.
Right.
So when a child feels owed something, whether it's attention, a toy, winning a game, any time that perceived debt isn't met, it can trigger explosive anger.
So that could be Ryan breaking the controller. He felt entitled to win.
That's a very likely driver, yes. The game violated that feeling of I'm owed this win.
That makes perfect sense. So we're seeing this internal state blame, victimhood, entitlement, and then it starts showing up externally. What's next in the progression?
Well, the symptoms kind of combine, and the child moves into what the course calls the pool of negative thinking.
Pool of negative thinking. Okay.
This is sort of the final stage before complete bitterness can set in. It covers general complaining, whining, maybe picking fights, being stubborn, disrespectful, defiant, all that stuff.
Right.
The guide is really clear on this point. Angry people are fundamentally unhappy people, and they tend to spread that unhappiness around.
And the ultimate result, if this cyclonic thinking just keeps going unchecked, is bitterness, which is described like a crust forming over the heart.
That sounds serious.
It is very serious.
How do parents actually know? Like, how can they measure if their child has reached that kind of severe stage?
It's measured by 3 pretty clear factors, and these become your target goals for improvement.
Okay.
First, are the episodes happening more frequently?
It's one thing. Got it.
Second, is the intensity of the episode way bigger than the situation really warrants. You know, like breaking a controller over losing one game.
Intensity, right.
And third, is the recovery time needed much longer than seems necessary?
Recovery time. Okay. If all three of those are high frequency, high intensity, long recovery, then yeah, bitterness has likely started to set in.
So the goal isn't just make the tantrum stop right now, but it's about installing these pillars inside the heart, as the guide calls them.
Exactly.
To fundamentally bring down that frequency, intensity, and recovery time over the long haul.
That's the long game. Which brings us to what the parents need to do. The framework.
Yeah, the parental framework.
It requires three really critical shifts in how parents respond. The first one is maybe the hardest.
Okay.
Don't engage emotionally.
Whoa, okay, wait. That sounds much easier said than done.
Mm-hmm.
How do you as a parent not engage when your seven-year-old is screaming bloody murder that you ruined their entire life because you cut their toast wrong?
Right.
Every instinct screams.
Right.
Argue, fix it, justify, maybe even scream back.
And that's the absolute crux of the training for the parent. You cannot let the child successfully suck you into their drama.
Why not? What happens if you do?
If you get sucked in, you've basically relieved them of the responsibility for their own emotion. The problem is no longer there. Suddenly, it's ours.
Ah, I see.
Staying calm, staying sort of dispassionate, it ensures the child keeps ownership of their internal emotional challenge.
Got it. Keep the problem the child's problem. Makes sense. What's the second step for parents?
Second, have a plan. And this is actually two plans.
Okay.
The parent needs a plan for how they are going to stay calm and actually do step one. But crucially, the child needs their own detailed plan for self-regulation when they feel that cyclone starting to spin.
A plan for the child.
Okay.
And the third, critical action.
Third is use training. Training is presented as way more powerful than just correction on its own.
Why?
Because it builds that internal muscle memory, that internal strength we talked about.
Okay, training builds strength. And this is where we get to that that intriguing method you mentioned.
Yes, this is where we meet probably the most unique, practical method in the whole course. Controlled intentional stress-producing situations. Or CISPS for short.
CISPS. Okay, that name. Sounds a little intimidating. Stress-producing situations. We should probably clarify that right away.
Definitely.
What exactly does the guide mean by CISPS? It sounds kind of harsh.
It does sound harsh, but it really just means controlled practice. The guide actually references a biblical framework, Romans 5, that says suffering produces perseverance, perseverance builds character, and character gives us hope.
Okay.
So the course applies this by saying parents sometimes need to, quote, produce suffering. But we have to be crystal clear here. This is not about being mean or cruel or punitive.
Right. Not punishment.
Not at all. It's about intentionally creating very low-stakes situations where the child is essentially forced to practice a new, healthy emotional response instead of their old pattern.
So it's like you wouldn't throw a kid who's terrified of water into the deep end of the pool.
Exactly. That would be cruel and counterproductive.
You'd have them like put their feet in, then maybe kick the water, blow some bubbles.
Precisely. We're acclimating them gradually, building the skill slowly. So if a child struggles with, say, emotional flexibility, you might intentionally interrupt them gently during some non-critical activity.
Okay.
And require them to stop what they're doing and listen to you with a happy heart for a moment. That tiny bit of stress, that interruption, it forces them to access those developing character skills they need.
I see.
Without that intentional, repeated practice in small doses, the skills just won't stick.
The intentionality is key then. So this training, these CISPS, they must be aimed at developing specific character qualities, like antidotes to those three big emotions.
Exactly right. We need to install specific qualities. Let's look at what those are. Across all three big emotions, anger, disappointment, anxiety, three qualities really emerge as essential pillars.
Okay, I'm going to guess gratitude is probably one of them, based on what you said earlier.
And you nailed it. It's the absolute overlap. For anger, gratitude helps the child accept what is instead of complaining about what isn't. It directly fights that entitlement mentality.
Makes sense.
And we pair gratitude with love because, as the framework points out from 1 Corinthians 13, love isn't easily angered, and also self-control to manage the physical energy that comes with anger.
Okay. Love, self-control, gratitude for anger. What about for disappointment or sadness?
Well, gratitude is essential there too, right? For seeing the positive even when things don't go their way.
Right.
And we pair it with cultivating joy, sort of an internal choice, and emotional flexibility. Mm. That's the ability to pivot gracefully when a plan they liked changes.
joy, contentment, which sounds related, flexibility, gratitude. Got it. Now, what about anxiety? That feels like a different kind of internal battle.
It does. And the anxiety plan is maybe the most detailed. It draws on a specific mental shift taught in the guide. The core antidotes here are peace and self-control.
Why self-control for anxiety?
Because you need self-control to focus the mind. The teaching, drawing from Philippians 4, says instead of being anxious, we need to make our requests known to God with thanksgiving. There it is again.
Gratitude.
The result, it says, is a peace that guards the heart and mind. But here's the active part. The child must exercise self-discipline to change their focus.
Ow.
By intentionally thinking only on what is true, right? Just admirable, lovely, praiseworthy, all that good stuff from verse 8. That shift away from the anxious thought requires active, trained self-discipline.
Wow, okay. That sounds like a pretty sophisticated multi-step process, especially for a younger person.
It is. It takes practice.
So how do we translate all these concepts, the character qualities, the plans, into practical tools? The guide mentions 8. How can a parent actually use these when, say, Ryan feels his anger starting that cyclone?
Right. We need actionable steps. Let's maybe zero in on, say, the 3 most effective tools a parent could start using pretty much right away.
Okay, good idea. Start with maybe the most strategic one.
I think that would be the written plan. This tool directly addresses that need for the child to own their process.
And it works.
You actually create a chart together. On the left side, the child writes down the steps they agree they will take when they feel that cyclone starting.
Their steps, okay.
On the right side, the parent can gather ideas from other trusted people, maybe a spouse, older siblings, even teachers, about how they stop themselves from losing control when frustrated. It shows the child it's a universal skill.
Can you give an example? Like, what might Ryan write down for his controller breaking anger?
Sure. Ryan's steps might be something simple like, 1, stop talking immediately. 2, take 3 deep breaths and put the controller down gently. 3, go to my room and look at my plan.
Okay.
And the crucial part is, after an episode happens, you don't just punish, you coach him using his own plan. Okay, Ryan, let's look at your steps. Which one could you have used right when you felt that frustration building?
So it moves it from punishment to self-correction.
Exactly. Based on his own agreed-upon plan, it shifts the dynamic.
Yeah, the parent becomes less of an enforcer and more of a coach. I like that. What's the next most powerful tool?
I'd say practice. This is the intentional, deliberate application of those CISPS we talked about.
The controlled, intentional, stress-producing situations.
Right. But the guide really emphasizes that the parent needs to tell the child, okay, we are practicing right now. Make it explicit.
I don't know that look.
For instance, maybe you tell Olivia you'll have a snack together at 10:00 a.m. Then at 9:55, you say, you know what? Actually, we're going to wait until 10:30 today. We're going to practice waiting with a happy heart. You're not actually depriving her maliciously. You're clearly framing it as building her perseverance muscle. You make the practice itself clear and measurable.
That's a fantastic reframe. You're actually making the small disappointment the training exercise itself.
Precisely. Okay, another really critical tool is transferring responsibility.
How does that work?
When the child is mid-cyclone, melting down, the parent remains calm. That's step 1, remember. And simply states that interaction or privileges or whatever the issue is cannot continue until they settle down. Like, wow, I see you are really upset right now. We can talk about the video game situation again once you've regained control.
Okay.
You are calmly but firmly transferring the burden of managing the emotion back onto the child. It reinforces that principle. Their emotion is their problem to solve with their plan.
That connects directly back to that very first parental action. Don't engage emotionally.
It absolutely does. They work hand in hand. And maybe just a quick note on a 4th tool, because it's important context, relationship.
Mm-hmm.
When you're using all these tools, you have to remember that comfort is still essential, especially for anxiety. And while some angry children might genuinely need space, the parent should never push the child away just because they're angry or difficult.
Right. Don't withdraw affection.
Exactly. Sometimes just quiet, physical closeness, maybe breathing together can help ground them. But you have to respect the child's needs in that moment, too. Some kids don't want to be touched when they're furious.
Good point. Okay. And maybe let's quickly touch on one last crucial tool you mentioned, affirm maturity.
Yes. This is about recognizing and pointing out progress. It really reinforces the internal change.
So for Olivia.
You might say, wow, Olivia, I remember you used to throw yourself on the ground when you felt this disappointed. But we didn't see that this time at all. You're making really great progress. using your plan to handle disappointment.
Acknowledging the shift.
Yeah, acknowledging the change in frequency or intensity or recovery time. It fuels their motivation to keep practicing.
Okay, so to try and synthesize everything we've covered, this is a really comprehensive, heart-focused approach. It kind of rejects simple control or quick fixes in favor of intentional training. We identify the cyclonic thinking, we stop engaging emotionally in the drama ourselves, and we provide specific measurable tools and focus on character qualities to build those internal pillars.
That's a great synthesis. That's the core of it. And you know, while this whole framework is often aimed at helping the child, the guide says again and again that parents almost inevitably find they need this training just as much, if not more.
Oh, I believe that.
The family, in this context, is really seen as designed by God to be a kind of laboratory for growth. A place where everyone, parent and child, is learning emotional maturity together.
Which means this knowledge is immediately applicable, well beyond just the family room, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
So for you, our listener, maybe here's the takeaway thought. Considering this idea that emotions really need to be trained, not just controlled or suppressed.
Yeah.
What is one specific controlled, intentional, stress-producing situation? One small CISPS you could intentionally implement this week? Maybe it's practicing gratitude when you get inconvenienced at work, or practicing emotional flexibility when a personal plan falls apart. Could be for yourself, or maybe gently introducing it for someone you care about.
Yeah.
That's definitely something to mull over until our next deep dive.